We are Sex Bob, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I hear a voice here, there are voice here. The pendulum of cold, the feminine of this girl. Reaching my threshold, staring at the streets till I'm blind. My body's stupid, stereo putrid. Spewing out music, in the road to it. Reaching my threshold.
What is going on? Another week in the books. This is the Black NPR. I'm your host, Danny Crudup. I'm calling from New York City. Just get the normal stuff out of the way at Twitter, at the Black NPR Pod at twitter.com, and the Black NPR at outlook.com. So if you have any issues or conversations you want to like add it up, you feel like there's issues that I have not addressed, or if you have any questions or concerns, those are the places to go. Yes, pregame radio, producer Brooklyn back on the other side. Let's get into it. So this week's episode is going to be pretty much like the other ones, kind of like last week. We're going to do our stories of the week, and then about 9:30, we're going to have a really in-depth conversation about Kanye West. Because I feel like last week, Kanye kind of went off the rails, and he's been going off the rails, and I feel like he's becoming more of a joke or a concern for people, but I don't think we find out like how we got to this point, and I want to be able to address it in an intellectual way. I'm saying, like, musically where he was at. So we're going to have one of his biggest fans, and my surrogate family is going to be on tonight talking about Kanye West. But let's, without bated breath, get into the news stories of the week. And again, if you have any concerns, questions, and you want to talk while we're on the show and you want to, like, engage, and it could be any point during the show tonight, feel free to call at 347-857-4302. Again, numbers 347-857-4302, and press 1 so we know you want to speak. Okay? All right, let's get into it. First story of the week, Saudi Arabia. We've been in bed. I mean, this is something that a lot of people have covered, but I'm trying to give it some focus for people who are not really aware of it. Saudi Arabia is a country that we tend to have a really weird relationship with, and it's not just now. We've had a weird relationship for a while because they're big oil producers, and they buy a lot of our shit for sake of argument. So we turn a blind eye. And they also are a strategic place for us in a part of the world where we're not very liked. So they're somebody who we're able to kind of deal with, and we can kind of launch shit from there. And they've been pretty against Paris. But this week, or it was last week, a Saudi critic, a writer, reporter, turned missing. He went to the Turkey consulate. No one knew where he went. He went to the Turkey consulate and never came out. He was like, is he missing? Is he missing? What happened to him? But recently it has come out that he's not missing. He's dead. They got the dude. They went in, sorted him out. And there's been a lot of international outcry in regards to Saudi Arabia's just known for their humanitarian, human crises and stuff that they've done to women over the years and just their low-key dictatorship. But, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard, the Crown Prince has come out and has been, you know, kind of moving slowly but surely into a more modern era, you know, letting women drive and allowing movies. They got to see the Emoji movie, which is a humanitarian crisis into itself. If you haven't seen that, I should do a show about the Emoji movie. Fucking thing was terrible. But in regards to just the guy, he was doing those things. But under the table, was doing just hucking missiles into Yemen. No rhyme, no reason. Just tons of human life being lost in the understanding of tracking down terrorists. The reporter and critic of the Saudi Arabian royal family, and he was murdered in Turkey. 15 Saudi nationals went into Turkey at night. And they was gone by the morning. They said that they were there for tourist reasons, but if they were tourists, it doesn't seem likely. Then when they first came out, when they first found out they may be dead, the Saudi Arabian government denied it completely, said this is not something to be done. You've got nothing to do with this. Y'all are wilding out and, you know, posting stuff that's not true. Then after a lot of international outcry and people kind of getting in the ass a bit and saying, like, hey, you know, there's some issues here. You need to kind of figure this damn thing out. They admitted that they had they were just interrogating him. The story they were going with, they were interrogating him. And in that interrogation, something went wrong, and he ended up biting the big one, dying. No one believes them. Everyone's like, you're full of shit. It's not true. You're lying. But the only country that's really on board with it, and if it starts with USA, it's USA. And that's because we're so embedded in Trump, being Trump and being somebody who has a personal stake, which is crazy. I mean, in terms of opinion, I try not to have too much opinion on the side of the show. But I feel like when your president is financially intertwined in a lot of the issues into which he is proceeding upon, I feel like we have reached a point where none of this shit really matters, because just the illusion of somebody being wrapped up or compromised used to be enough to get somebody out the paint. Now people are able to just flat say it. As Trump said it on the news, he was like, yeah, I sold them buildings and, you know, like, they're good people or whatever, and I'm not trying to mess that up. We got deals in place. And whatever they did with this dude getting clipped, I can't have that fuck up these deals, which seems almost, it's almost the way the government's supposed to work. But, you know, people wanted a businessman, an economic guy, economic crisis. More on that in a minute. The Saudis admitted to the botch interrogation. Right now, Saudis, to the last I read on it, they're allowing allowing some investigation to take place. Some UN people kind of take a look at it. If I had to guess what's going to come from it, like what I had to say with the Kavanaugh hearing, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to happen. As long as we need oil, as long as we got that back, they're going to pretty much do whatever the fuck they want, however the fuck they want to do it. It's a damn shame, especially when the people who are responsible for getting you the information and saying what's what are the ones getting clipped. That's sad. Next up, a new study reveals the real reason all those Obama voters switched to become Trump voters. And I know we've heard in the news the narrative is that, it was about economics. I think I said in the other story, that's why we voted. They said they voted for a businessman president because of economics. And somewhere between 6.7 and 9.2 million voters switched from Obama to Trump in that 2012 to 2016. Election 2006 was divided by 40,000, so that switch really meant a lot. Again, of a $40,000 swing through, 40,000 voters swing through when you got 6.7 million switching over, which is very rare. Clinton suffered the biggest losses in places where Obama was the strongest, places like Wisconsin, places like Illinois, like those Midwest Democratic strongholds have switched over completely, almost wholesale, to become Trump areas. The prevailing wisdom in that was that Trump tapped into an economic crisis and concern and feeling among, I guess to use the term, uneducated whites and, you know, coal miners, coal miner story, the factory workers, pretty much that narrative that they felt forgotten by the elite coastals and they were going to Trump because Trump spoke to them. That was always the narrative. Well, a study coming out of the University of California and I think another place, they found that very little evidence that it was instead about racism and sexism, which I think anybody who's a man or woman can agree, they felt that on a level. A lot of the white women who voted, with a lot of white women voted, a lot of uneducated white women voted for him. And what they're seeing is that in places where those switches happen, there was very little financial stress that refers back to the stress that they're saying is the issue. Meaning the biggest switches and the biggest Obama votes to Trump votes didn't come on the back of coal miners and didn't come on the back of factory workers, but it was reality middle class or to lower middle class white people who were financially in the same space as they were before. So the only thing that they could kind of vote on when asked questions or when polled is that the prevailing rhetoric, the racist rhetoric, the sexist rhetoric, and the homophobic rhetoric, that was the thing that triggered them and got them on board and spoke to their innate racism and innate sexism. So a lot of us already saying no shit, but this is a study, again, as you know, and it's going to be the nature of this particular show to say this out loud. Studies are not laws. can be refuted by another study. A study is just a way for us to kind of look and see that there's some information that's been going on and what's happening. So in general, when a study comes out, we try to generally get a good idea of what the situation is. So we're going to keep an eye on it. I'm probably going to refer back to that study as we go on, as I want to do a future show, probably in a week or two, that's going to go into like how it changed. I want to have an actual Republican on, and I want to talk with him and just ask him questions. And I'm going to get a bunch of questions from you guys. So I don't want that to be a call-in show, because I feel like for the first one, it's just going to turn to this guy to call in and get yelled at. I don't want that to be the case. I want there to be like actual dialogue. So I'm going to let you guys email me in the questions that you want me to ask him, as long as they make sense. And I will let, if they don't make sense, I will let you know why they don't make sense. And I'm going to have them on probably, if not next week, the week after. We're going to do a full show, pretty much just ask Republican questions, kind of go back and forth. I'm not going to take any stance on it. We're just going to get a general idea of what a Republican voter sounds like. And this is someone that I genuinely respect in regard to his political acumen. Okay? So let's jump into the third story. In a trend starting with the Golden Knights, and then also with Oakland Raiders going to Las Vegas. It looks like the Anaheim Angels have opted out of their are going to be moving to Vegas. So that's the understanding that's where they're going to try to go to. Apparently, the situation was that they had a 10-year lease. They had a 10-year option, meaning that they either opt out now or they would have to wait until 2018 for this matter to come up again. And I think they probably felt that living in the shadow, I don't think people realize Anaheim is to L.A. as Newark is to New Jersey. I mean, which is insane if you think about it, but it's nowhere near it. It's not close. And while it's easy to get to Meadowlands, I guess if you take the train or the thing, it's not that – I mean, it's bad. I've never been because I don't like it, but it's doable. In Anaheim from L.A., you're not going to do it. And I think they feel like they want to be the main baseball team in the city, and they're going to always be under the Dodgers. So I think they feel like they have a better market share. And also, I don't know if you guys are hockey guys, but my daughter's a hockey person, so I'm aware of it. The Golden Knights are doing great. Like, they have sold out almost every night. The fan base is super into it. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that because of fears of gambling, they never wanted to put a team in the city. But now that no one gives a shit and we live in an age of fuck off, I guess they made a better option to say, hey, we're going to stick in Vegas. I like it. Always like to give people the opportunity to kind of root for a team. I think that's solid. And Anaheim Angels have been asked for a real long time because no one really gives a shit about them. And I don't know if you guys are baseball people. One of the best, if not the best baseball player, Trout, is on the Angels. So maybe now that they're in another city or when they get to another city, you'll be able to see him more often. Okay, and final news story of the night, Kamala Harris, the senator from California, and fact, just absolute doll, like gorgeous, absolute gorgeous. Like, that's when they say black don't crack, Kamala Harris is the chaser. And also the woman who emails me maybe 3 days a week asking me to caulk up dough. Not doing it, Ms. Harris, not going to happen. She hits me up for dough more than my kid hits me up for dough. That's a lot. So her advisors are plotting for 2020. She has not admitted to running yet. That has not come up yet. That's not something that she has planned or figured out. But the strategizers now to focus in on Iowa. So I don't know if you guys are aware. Some people aren't. Iowa's where it starts. There's a caucus. A caucus is not a preliminary. A caucus is more or less, I mean, in essence, it is a preliminary. So, I mean, you go and you kind of get a good idea, but a caucus is done differently than a preliminary, meaning that it's done like a town hall. It's a whole old bit of to-do. But it's in Iowa, so Iowa is going to be the most important state for a couple of years when people kind of like seeing if they – because if you can win in Iowa and you can swing Iowa, you're in a good space because then that usually gives you the momentum to carry the next ones, which I believe is New Hampshire is the first primary. It's a preliminary, so about that primary. First primary is in New Hampshire, the actual primary. And I've lived in New Hampshire. It's dope. If you're a politic guy or you're somebody who likes seeing how the system works, living in New Hampshire during primary season is the best. Like, most of the dudes who ran that year, I met McCain, Richardson, who was drooling on himself when I saw him, Obama, you know, met or seen in passing, because they got to hit New Hampshire hard. And New Hampshire's a weird state, because it doesn't really make much sense. Like, one part of it is a Boston suburb. Another part of it is the fucking woods. Another part of it is the fucking woods. And another part of it's the beach. So they have to try to figure out what makes sense and then kind of step in there. So she's focusing on Iowa first. Then the next step is to hit up is Nevada, South Carolina, and California. The focus of that is the focus on more diverse states where her candidacy might resonate with larger minority communities. Or I'm thinking, when I hear that, I'm hearing, oh, man. I'm thinking more along the lines of, See, now I'm going to give you a little inside baseball. I was supposed to go out and play the lotto tonight. I was supposed to play Mega Millions of Powerball. I completely forgot, because I think one is like 6 point something billion, and the other one is like 400 something billion, million. So that kind of got me fooled. My phone just went off and reminded me that I didn't go, and I'm hoping that it rolls over. Because if I win that shit, I'm not doing the show no more. Just giving you the heads up. If I win the lotto, y'all not seeing me no more. That's a new story. Daniel wins lotto. Y'all never seeing him again. News at 11. This nigga out. But anyway, yeah, so I think she's going to be focusing more on getting the young people out and trying to do an Obama 2.0. I don't know, man.
Bruh.
I'm fucking out.
Bruh.
Okay, who is me? I'm fucking out. That's a new story. Hear that? Once I'm done, they're getting that lotto money. Y'all niggas ain't never seeing me again. That's a new story. Put that up. Fuck it out. I got $6 million. I'm going to try to educate you niggas. No, fuck that. First things first, if I win the lotto, I'm going full Republican. I'm going to be the 1% like a motherfucker. If I got more than $500 million, what? You trying to cancel food deliveries? Do it. You trying to just cancel school in general? Do it. Whatever you got to do, I'm going to be an evil nigga. But anyway, I digress. See how CNN fucks things up? CNN got me thinking about my future. Anyway, but yeah, so she's going to be doing that. I don't know if she could pull Obama 2.0, because I think Obama he came out of nowhere, and I think we see Kamala Harris a mile away. And I think in order for those charismatic black stories to happen, it has to kind of happen organically. It has to happen in a pocket. It has to happen right before, almost kind of like when you start in sports, when you start doing well right before the playoffs. I think you need to hit it running. And I think it's so early in, and we want somebody else, but then you end up turning into like a Bernie Sanders. Because once they figure out a line to kind of get at you, that's it. Also, everybody kind of fucked with Obama on the Democratic side. And as you saw in the last one, not anybody really fucked with Bernie Sanders for whatever the reason. And I think that killed it. And then nobody fucked with Hillary like that. It was just something we had to do. And in doing so, nobody was really excited about it. And for whatever the reason, and I think this is the reason we always end up these fucked up situations, is the Democratic Party only works when they're excited, but they don't have any follow through. The Republicans never get excited, but they're all follow through. That's why when they get a little bit of power, so much shit gets done, because they know exactly what they were going to do when they got there. And I think I'm not really Democrat, but I have to kind of throw my lot in with them as a black man. They get fired up and like, oh, I'm going to do this shit. And then you get there and then nothing gets done because it's all transient fucking energy. None of it was planned out. There's no, like, this is our guy, this is the platform, this is how we're running it. The only reason we're even linking, and again, we're going to probably do, I want to line that up. I want to do a midterm special to kind of line us up before the midterms and do some of the states at large and some of the runs and races. So, I mean, that should be, I might get the Republican guy, if not that week, the week after, or the week prior. But I want to do that before the November midterm so we can kind of engage and kind of talk a little bit about it. That's going to be a big one. But, yeah, it's all energy. The only reason the midterms even a fucking thing is because people are angry at Trump. But the reason it is a Trump is because nobody was fucking excited. Like, no one could be, proactively excited. That's not how excitement works. And that's why the Democratic Party's always fucking up. That's why Trump, as an idiot, was able to get all this shit done within the span of a 2-3 year window when Obama was president and had the whole everything. ain't a goddamn thing get done. Barely got healthcare, and that healthcare he got was almost a pussy hair away from getting fucking taken away in the first 6 months. The gay marriage thing, cool. But other than that, a lot of stuff didn't get done that could have been squared away. Just did it. And it made it real hard to get the fuck out the pain. And I think my big thing, and I think we can address this, you can email me again at blacknpr@outlook.com. I think Obama had more hope in the country that he was running and operating in than he needed to. I think he believed at the core people were good, intelligent people, and I think it's been proven, I think it's no doubt in the mind that he was fucking wrong, because people have acted like real assholes. And you can make the argument they've always acted like real assholes. But anyway, that's the news with Kamala Harris running. So just if we have another 9 minutes, I want to engage about last week. We talked about Venom last week. We talked about a few other things, the Kavanaugh stuff. But yeah, just to kind of do a kind of touchdown on Venom. Venom did very well. The movie got, I think it was like 80. I think it broke all types of records, but that's bullshit. Because they usually put movies like that on weekends where the records are really easy to break. But that's fine. I'll get to say the devil's due. Not really my cup of tea. Some people enjoy it. I kind of have an idea of why it was so hated for some people. I think if you're someone who's seeing it and you have an awareness to how these things are made and you're like paying attention to those notes, it's annoying. I equate it to watching. It's a terrible movie. So I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying sometimes something made terribly could be enjoyable, and you might not even think it's terrible. You just don't even enjoy it yourself, and that's fine. I equate it to watching Chopped. If you're like someone who watches Chopped, and you're watching Chopped, you enjoy Chopped, Chopped's fun. And you're watching the way they make it. But then after a while, you know how something needs to get made for it to be good. And you're aware of it. You're watching it happen. You're seeing it in real time, them forgetting to put shit in that they needed to put in. You're watching in real time when they're trying to make a gnocchi with 5 minutes ago. You're watching in real time when the black person is always the black person forgets the fucking ingredient from the box. And you're watching it. And you're like, come on, Raheem. Put in the fucking charge. Come on, Raheem. There's 3 minutes left. Come on, Raheem. You're going to get chopped. Always there, but I don't know what it is. It's something about black folk. No, it's not even an ingredient that you think they'd leave out. Like, for example, like there was one where it was like the like alligator meat. And she was like, I'm from Queens. I don't even know what to do with it. She used the alligator meat. Completely forgot the beat. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe if I was that situation, but I'm completely going on a tangent. I feel that if you are aware on some level how a decent movie is made, or just how movies are made in general, you see those little anachronisms and it throws you for a loop. So when this thing came out, it was comedically bad to me. But for some people, it was what they expected. It wasn't bad. It was entertaining. Was entertaining? Yes. Dave Brown was 100% correct. And he's not normally correct. He's wrong most of the time. But when it comes to this, I think he was correct. It was an entertaining romp. I think it was enjoyable for what it was. I don't think it was trying to be anything more than just a fun flick, you know. I think the issue that I had, that umbrage, and the thing that kind of, the only thing that really made bad was the laziness into which they made it. I feel like it felt very cheap. It felt very money hungry. Like, I don't mind you as a capitalist society. You're not doing this shit for free. And, again, I see these movies, and so why do you see them? Because at a point in my life, as someone who enjoyed comic books and enjoyed things, I didn't have access to a movie with Venom in it. That would have made no sense to me in 1995 or 96 or 92 to have a movie with Venom in it. The fact that I got one, fair enough. But my thing is that the last 10 years, 10, 15 years of movie making happened. And that movie completely decided just ignore it. And my fear is, and this is obviously whatever, but my fear is that people see that they were successful being super lazy, and is a word that I want to use. I always lose when I need to use it. But it's so cheap and bankrupt that I hope that another studio doesn't see it and go, oh, we don't got to do that other shit no more. We can get back to making paint-by-number shit. And the problem is, me and David, we were like clowning the director, but the director's not bad. He made one of my favorite movies. He made Zombieland. I thought Zombieland moved very well. I thought Zombieland was a solid movie from beginning to end. And so for him to do this, I honestly thought it was just some guy. It really felt like some dude. Like just some guy that found him on the street. Like Catwoman. And then that Catwoman gets brought up a lot. And I would not say it's bad as Catwoman. There's very little that's... I will make the argument that if you're going to look at three things, right? We have 9/11, we have the Holocaust, we have racism, and we have Catwoman. It's a dead heat, bro. Like, we're really, it's here, it's a pussy here one way, it's a pussy here the next way. I couldn't tell you, fam. It's bad. It had no, like I would say, it had no business being that bad. And it was like, it was so bad that Halle Berry showed up to the Razzies to get her award. She knew what the fuck she did. She was on. She was there. She knew what she did. And she had won an Oscar the year prior. Like, her Oscar she got for getting Backshots from Billy Bob Thornton, which you could find on Pornhub, by the way, if that was something that is doing it for you. It did it for me. I felt that in that moment. I was like, this would be a pretty good POV scene. But I digress. I just felt that it was bad, but it was fine. I just hope they don't continue on that path. And because I didn't feel like Spider-Man, even Ant-Man, because I was talking about Ant-Man the other day, I thought Ant-Man's Wasp was fine. I didn't hate it. It was fun. It was a fun, interesting movie. It had its good parts, but at no point did I think it was bad. There was no. It was structured. It's like they figured it out how to do it. That's the one thing I love about Marvel. They figured out how to give you a 2-hour movie and you walk out feel like, oh, I'm glad I spent money to see that. Venom, I'm glad I got to see it because I got content out of it. But I'm like, I can see how this, because when Woody Harrelson shows up, spoiler alert, with that red fucking wig on, I was like, oh, they're doubling the fuck down. Because I was like, it's Woody Harrelson. It's just Woody Harrelson and a red wig. But anywho, we're going to put that in. I don't know if you're keeping track. We are going to put Venom with Judge Kavanaugh as topics we will no longer discuss in the show. It's going into the show topic graveyard.
Bruh.
And I'm hoping to have a sound effect. And you'll see how I was able to connect Judge Kavanaugh and Venom. It's equal injustices and crimes. So we're going to throw those into the fucking pit. We're done with that. Next week, because we're about to get into the Kanye West show. Oh, for fuck's sake. And next week on the show, I believe we're going to be doing movies. But I'm not sure, so I'll keep you guys in the loop if you follow me on my Facebook or my Twitter. But I need to see exactly when the midterm is, because we might need the midterm special next week to kind of touch base on it, because I feel like the sooner we get that information out. Yeah, so we'll do the midterm special next week, and then we'll do the After Republican if we get that, if I can get them. Or we might even have them on that show. We'll see how it goes. So just keep tuned if you're into the political stuff. Next 2 weeks are going to be very highly political. But this week, it's not. And I'll kind of give you a primer before my guests show up. We're going to be talking about Kanye West. We're going to be talking about all this Kanye West. All right? We're going to talk from the beginning. We're going to be talking from when he started out, when he was doing beats. We're going to be talking about when he was starting out as a rapper. We're talking about the whole wire shut through the wire, Kanye, all the way up to him liking Trump because he didn't have a father growing up. Right? You're going the whole kit and caboodle, try to get there, to try to make sense of it, or at the very least, put him in the same top of graveyard that Venom and Judge Kavanaugh's in. I don't know. So, I mean, if you're a Kanye person, if you enjoy music, you enjoy or have enjoyed Kanye, you have some questions about it, or you're wondering just what the general the vibe is, we hope that we answer some stuff now. I'm not a huge kid from the beginning, top-notch, and I'm going to let my guests do the majority of the talking because they have more insight on this. I like Kanye. Kanye's not bad. In the beginning, his beats were never really for me. I enjoyed Power. I enjoyed some of his more boisterous stuff. I felt that he was the vanguard. I think he's the proto-version of what we refer to as a SoundCloud rapper. I feel like he was the he wasn't SoundCloud rapper, but he was the first to kind of DIY, kind of come into the scene musically inclined, you know, and it wasn't so much boom bap. I think he was the bridge between boom bap and what we have now. But, yeah, I think at the very least he deserves to have just him put into context before, because he needs to get thrown away. I'm just being clear, black people, white people, all people, I think he needs to get thrown away. If you were white and didn't like, if you were just someone who didn't like him prior to last week and now you like him, no, keep the same energy. If you're somebody who loved him but hate him now, that's fine. But let's have some context when we address it and we talk about it. We can be good to go. So here I'm getting my guests ready. The two guests going on once. One is going to be the host of the Financial Emancipation Podcast and runs a really good Instagram feed of emancipation problem, financial emancipation, telling you all about how to manage your finances. Mr. Malik Branch and Chantal Branch, who's always here to yell and sound like a sailor. So they'll be coming in now. Just need to get them the call in, and we'd be ready to go. But before I do that, let me do the ad read. I always forget to do that. It's gorilla fucking broadcasting, bro. Okay. Our sponsors, M.E. Productions, for all your video productions and photography needs, hit them up on Facebook at M.E. Productions with a Z. MEPRODUCTIONZ, or email heyme.tv@gmail.com. Thanks to our other sponsors over at LitBK. Their website is LitBKNY. Okay, put them on. We got Chantel in. LitBKNY. Put in customer code pregame is lit for 20% off your 20% off your purchase, and don't forget I Crave Wear. Check them out at Instagram at I Crave Wear and their website at icraveware.com. Okay, we're good to go. Push one. We're ready to get in. We're ready to go. Black, put it through. Hey, it's Branch number one. Chantel, say hello.
Hi, you can hear me okay?
I can hear you okay.
Okay, good.
And we're still waiting for the expert, right?
You got to
leave.
Oh,
put that one through. She should be there. Put the expert through, Black. Okay. So let's get into it.
Hello.
You can start off. Hey, Malik.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hey. Dude, I got my family. We're doing it. Doing it, see? All right. So
we're
going to
be
going into Kanye. We did it, fam. So we're going to be talking about Kanye. I'm not the biggest fan. Before we start off, I know Malik, you are the expert here, but I want to put him in context where he started out. Let's just generally get into, like, what was your opinion of it? Like, what was your opinion before all this happened?
Well, I was a Kanye West supporter early as the college dropout time because I thought I related to his messaging that was coming through of this, like, college experience. College dropout came out in 2004. I was 2 years out of college. So it really resonated with me as this guy who wasn't the boom-bap New York rapper, but he was really coming with, the cosign of the boom-bap rappers. And he was conscious, and that's how College Dropout reads through the whole time. It was rebellious. It was soulful. It was all of this message-based music that kind of took the whole rap game by storm because it was so different.
Yeah, that's why I felt like he was the bridge. But then he was – because before him, you would have, like, Jay-Z, and then if you wanted conscience, you had to, like, practically go full Hotep, you know what I mean, and which is
right.
Not as awful. Just fucking awful. So I felt that he was the one who could say, like, hey, you went to college, it's fine. Like, I feel like he's what J. Cole wanted to be, or what he
no,
is, I guess,
actually,
depending on who you ask.
Right. J. Cole is what Kanye West was pretending to be in 2004.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're saying
Kanye
he was
West was being
be
a
then.
Character. Kanye West was pretending to be this person with a college education and all these experiences. J. Cole actually was that person. We come to find out that Kanye West dropped out of art school. He didn't drop out of college as he described it on this album, but he really did kind of co-opt that, allowed him to be like a Mos Def, like a Talib Kweli without the skill set, and without the kind of the real certification of being a true backpacker, because he wasn't that either.
So what do you guys think he is?
Do you want to let Malik finish, or do you want me to tell you where I come in with Kanye West?
No, go Malik first as the expert, and then you jump in.
Yeah. Well, I would say that when College Dropout was out, what I thought he was a voice of a molding and ever changing backpack type conscious rapper. That's what I thought he was in 2004. What he is now is another thing, but at that point I thought that's what he was, and I was really into that because I thought it was going to give a new voice. I thought he was going to be the voice of the new generation.
Don't you think, like, for a second he was? For a bit,
I think he was, but I think he was carrying water in a pail that had holes in the bottom, and we just didn't realize it. Also,
okay.
He wasn't writing his own rhymes, so he wasn't giving us his own thoughts.
No, not at all. I always kind of saw him as a producer first and a rapper second. Like, he always came across as a more polished RZA. Or in the van of, like, RZA, or, just somebody who produced very well, rapped okay, but had a particular aesthetic that people enjoyed. Because I'm looking at his producers, his production, he produced as early as 1999 for people I don't recall, Trina and Tamara. But then he did The Truth with Beanie Siegel in 2000. The main one, it's the one that kind of put him on the map. He did Izzo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was him. Gets Us Back by Scarface, Get by Tali Quali, and he did Bonnie and Clyde in 2002. And at that point, he was kind of just all hits at that point, with the exception of Knock Knock by Monica.
No, Monica.
I love
that
song.
Don't do that.
I love that song. I love Monica. Let's not
you
do
know
that.
Her girl.
Yeah. I just want to make sure y'all was paying attention when I threw that in there. Like, let me throw some shade, make sure y'all listening. I mean, that'd be a real weird thing for me to start shading Monica for no reason. But go. All right, go on, Shantel.
All right, so my perspective on Kanye West is very different than Malik's because, as you know, I'm more of a person who would err on the side of Beanie Siegel versus Kanye West. So when I first saw him, I thought he was a cornball. And
You were such a bird.
I thought he was a well-dressed cornball, but I was like, who the fuck is this cornball? Like, okay, through the wire.
Always imagine Chantel was sitting around in an Abrex jacket and Tim Boots go, who's this cornball chewing on a stick? He's not chewing on a stick outside of a barbershop. Go, who's this cornball?
So,
go ahead.
But I like a story. So, you know, crashing and making the song and having a broken jaw. You know, I love
the wire,
it's
right?
An interest story, right? So, but when College Dropout came out, I was just kind of like, this boy is kind of cool, but I already knew I liked Tyler and Quali. I knew I liked Mos Def because I knew what they were giving me, and, like, they were really doing, like, a thing. And he was kind of, like, adjacent. Like Malik said, he was more like the cool, fly, backpack dude kind of dude. But when you really start pulling apart, like, because I have to go back. Because when I tell you I actively ignored Kanye West until, until My Dark Twisted Fantasy, that's not an exaggeration. I knew College Dropout because I always would buy music. I knew the singles. I knew the songs that had people that I liked on it, like If It Had Consequence or if it had, like,
so you skipped College Dropout, you skipped Late Registration, you skipped Graduation, you skipped 808 and Heartbreak.
No, Graduation, if you really want to hear something, me and Malik back in 2007 had beef about the fact that I thought it was corny. Like, I thought Graduation, aside from Flashing Light and the other song that was my MySpace song, Champion, those two songs, and that was it. Like, those are my two songs to tell you that I went back and listened to all of the albums, like, all day. College Dropout, Kanye was trying to affect this lower middle class black energy, this aspirational, that's why I wear polo, that's why I like Louis Vuitton, because I'm close enough to this energy to see, like, this is what people with money and this is what they do. So I'm going to be a polo head, too, and I want to be upwardly mobile. And he kind of jumped on that and pretended to be more intellectual than he actually was. So when you're listening to what he's saying, he ain't really, like, kicking knowledge. Like, he's just
No.
Complaining. He's been complaining the whole fucking time. And
the entire
time. He was talking about, like, Magic Johnson has the cure for AIDS. He's talking all of this. The government put this in the neighborhood. All of this shit. And he's promising to marry that girl that he didn't marry. And then when he's on the song with Jay-Z, I don't know who wrote those rhymes, because then he, like, tries to be, like, a rapper. Like, he, like, becomes very Rod Strait. And I noticed the same thing even with the late registration. And with Graduation, it was festive. The one thing about Graduation is that's when he kind of turns the corner and becomes, like, super festive. But it's still kind of corny.
Yes, I know for me, when I kind of was like, when I heard Diamonds, the Diamond song, when he did the Diamonds on Forever beat, and he was trying to, like, do a thing. And I was like, oh, he's trying to really do a thing. And
yeah.
I don't know, like.
But he always,
yeah,
always, he's always been needing to be accepted. That's the big thing with him.
Right.
He was always, he wanted to be accepted by Jay-Z. He wanted to be accepted by people who looked at him and thought, who the fuck is this cornball? Which was like everyone. The idea of having him on a song with Cam. I mean, the song with Cameron is good. Like, I know people, like, now everybody thinks Cameron's the worst person in the world, but, like, the song that Cameron.
Do they think he's the worst person in the world?
A lot of people like to make it seem like Cam didn't contribute, we'll say.
The
computer's putin'. Like, depending on when you get into, like, your hip-hop, that sticks out to you. But Cam has, like, a vocal.
Yeah, bars. He was nasty.
Yeah.
I think that he had some really ridiculous mentions. I think he had some. But I think he was doing ad-libs that sounded like lines. And we remember the ad-libs like lines because of his flow. But that's just my opinion of it. But he was good. Biggie thought so. That's the reason he got signed in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. And then with 808 the Heartbreaks, he took a turn. But listening to it more recently, I was like, well, this is nice music for the background. But the lyrics aren't there. The songs aren't there. And I
that was like Heartless, Love Lockdown.
Yeah,
Paranoid.
Yeah. So, like, but the musicality of that was different. He went away from the soul samples. And I think because he keeps trying to get this acceptance. So you can't go but so far with soul samples. You know who likes soul samples? Black people and really cool white people. But the
and black people from a certain age, too.
Right.
Well, I don't think that, I don't agree that I think his first three albums where he shot his load, Kanye was searching for acceptance.
You branched from a really spin a phrase. Last week, Chantel was telling people to suck dick from the back, and now you shooting loads. All right, guys.
He gave us, in better terms, he gave us all he had to give. Because what he was saying and what he wanted everyone to know about him or think about him, again, we have to put in context that Kanye West was not saying his own words. And when you're trying to be the voice of a movement or you're trying to move forward a culture and you're not using your own words, it's inauthentic. And he was not being
wanted.
I
in
think
your mind,
though,
do you feel like he wanted
to
move the culture along?
He wanted to be. I'm sorry?
I'm saying, do you think that was his intention? I mean, do you think it was his intention to move culture along? Or you think that that on him?
I don't know what culture he wanted to move forward, but he wanted to be the person who did something. I don't even think he knew what he just wanted to be the person who did something, because somewhere in his life, if you listen closely to his music, he never felt, not only did he not feel accepted, but you hear the bitterness in Kanye West from College Dropout very much through Late Registration and especially in Graduation, because it sounds as though Kanye West believed he should have been on far sooner than he was. That Kanye believed people should have known he was good before everyone decided he was. And he was bitter about that, and you could hear it in the music. And I think that the transition into the more poppy kind of music, I would say he went less boom bap, less soul, and went into what he went into in Graduation, because he was looking for someone else, because we hadn't given him what he wanted fast enough. So he was going to find
I see what you're saying. He wanted to be the genius
by
the time Graduation came out.
Hove by the time Late Registration came out, and Hove was still Hove, and he wasn't Hove. And people were still looking at him like the guy who did H to the Izzo. It's like, you're still, like how you said, you're the producer first, to be some lyricist. And then every time he would get on a song with Jay-Z, he would then quickly switch into humility and talk about how he got washed on the song. So it was almost like, are you here to compete or are you here to get washed? Either way, we don't give a fuck because you're not Jay-Z and you never will be.
I can't imagine he thought that he was on that level. But you know what? Anything's possible.
But listen to how
I'm looking at it
now, though.
You got college, you got a college drop light registration graduation, right? So you can put that in its own subsection. I would say 808 Heartbreaks and My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is its own thing. I think that's its own oeuvre.
No, but check it out.
So let me say, I think if you look at those two as one, like a chapter, that's when he was trying to become that's the transition from him going from the hip hop world to the hype beast. I'm making music to do coke to. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing music for. Yeah. So go ahead.
See, I disagree with you because I think maybe you could do coke to 808 to Heartbreak, but he always, for a while, he wanted the love of the rap. Remember, everybody's on My Dark Twisted Fantasy. Everyone.
Let's take a look.
The fucking
literally
RZA's on it. Ghostface Killah's on it. Fucking Pusha T's on it. Jay-Z's on it.
Nicki Minaj.
Pete Rock is on it. Nicki Minaj is on it. Rick Ross is on it. Consequence,
Raekwon.
I think, showed back up. Raekwon is on this shit. Saha the
Alicia Keys
is
singing background. Swiss Beatz is on it. Like every
When the fuck did that happen? Okay. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, me and Malik happened to know that album back listening to it.
Jeez. Was it a good trip?
Yeah, it was a good trip.
Okay.
Yeah, but see,
Charlotte
this is also what it is too as well. And with this, My Dark Twisted Fantasy. Remember, the lead single on that was Runaway. That was when he had that whole, he was going to make the video with the ballerinas. This is when he was trying to show us some sort of artistic that he was beyond. He was beyond. Although he had just made a whole album where Pusha T basically wrote everything, and he was sounding like
Saha
the hardest.
Wrote a lot of it.
Saha too, but he was sounding like the hardest rapper out, and he was over there with chicks and that who were birds and trying to be real abstract and artsy, and it was just
artistry. So would you say 808 Heartbreaks is his own kind of transition album, almost?
Yeah.
It's not his first three, but it's not that. That's kind of like when he realized, maybe he learned that he'd get more love. And he started to believe his own hype that he's like this artist.
Yes.
And he's this art. He's not even an artist. He's an artiste. And he
musical
do
genius.
Random shit. A musical genius.
Yes.
But after 808 Heartbreaks. 808 Heartbreaks, I felt, was hip hop, but it was like hip hop, not light, but it was more along the lines like he was
electronic.
Shooting something specific. Yeah. Like he
was
kind of like Vince Staples' second album. It felt very. Like he was shooting for like an LA crowd, but when you say My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, just him being. That's when you think he became full Kanye at that point, or you think there was still some other guy you knew left? Because he did.
But
watch
remember
that's
when
he went
to Hawaii. He went to Hawaii,
and then
they recorded, and everybody came to him, and like he got it was like a dream. It was a dream, also a dream producer because he had Pete Rock, he had Q-Tip out there, he had like all of these talented people. Because what I also am seeing a little bit, he's a little bit of a leech. He kind of becomes who he's hanging out with. So, because think about all that pro-black shit they're talking on Watch the Throne. Watch the Throne is literally an album about how we got rich and we are bringing all the niggas with us. That is the general consensus of that album. Except when he says, when I have a kid, I want them to be a Republican. Because, again, since he wants white people's acceptance. So his kids, so white people will know that he's okay. But Jay-Z's whole theme for that whole album is, I made it, I'm bringing my niggas along, we going everywhere, we wasn't supposed to be here, we survived, we made it, we got out, we are out. And now we are here, and we're not going nowhere. And Kanye kind of is following along in that, but
that's not his
still
message,
that,
he just was there.
And that's also still in the, it ain't Ralph's though. It's also, it's still, I need money, I want to make this clothing line, screaming and yelling at people. He's starting to get into that stage.
Wasn't he poor? Because I don't know his backstory like that. But did he grow up poor?
No, his mother was a college professor. His mother was a college
adjunct. He was fine.
He was fine.
So where do you think
he was?
Yeah, he was doing all right. Not bad. Like, he didn't know any type of, like, remember in the Dave Chappelle special, and he was like, I know everyone thinks I'm from D.C. I'm really from Silver Springs. I was fine. Like, everything was okay. I didn't have to worry about none of that shit that Nas is talking about. I was okay.
Right.
Like, it was right. One of the situations. He was not having to deal with any of the hardships or problems. So why does he act like somebody who just, like, if he doesn't have any money, he's worthless?
Well, because
I don't think it's money. I think that
rich.
What Kanye West is looking for is acceptance. I think that that is something that he has never fully had for whatever reason, not to get into his his psychological background or whatever. But Kanye West is looking for acceptance from different groups, and it's never the same group because he's a chameleon in that way. I don't mean to get all into my horoscope shit, but he is a Gemini. Those people don't really have a solid foundation on anything. They will flip and flop to go any which way. Sorry, Gemini, but that's how they roll. And he
Danny doesn't believe in astrology.
I did,
okay.
And I'm telling you, he a crazy fucking Gemini, and he flip flops. And I think that when people like to give Kanye West a lot of space because they believe that bad things happened to him when he started to behave badly after his mother died. And what people don't listen and pay attention to is that he was being a brat before his mother died. He has a song on Late Registration about Big Brother where he's basically crying about the fact that Jay-Z didn't give him all the attention that he needed. This person is a person who was crying out for acceptance. And that is what we're seeing now manifesting. And every time he did something that people weren't going to like or that people, then he would flip back. So he did 808s and Heartbreak, and then people didn't like that. It wasn't as wildly popular. And he went back. Oh, he overcorrected with My Dark Twisted Fantasy. And then after that, he started to do his own thing. Whenever people criticize him, he goes and he overcorrects in a different way.
Like how he did the thing last week and then was almost instantaneously in Uganda being the king of all black,
right.
Like the week after.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Gotcha. That's
what
he does.
And
that's why he can't be trusted. And that's why he should be eliminated from the conversation because he can't be trusted. He's a danger to us and we need to have black men speak up to put him out. That's my point. He needs to be gone. We need to abolish him from the group, take away his participation in this black race, and send him to be accepted where he want to be accepted, which is over there. I don't know what's there. Just over there.
The problem here is that, and this is, I agree with that regard, because I'm not big into tribalism. Everyone knows that. I'm not. But I also feel like he is speaking on behalf of people. And if just one person, one white supremacist goes, see, they get it, he's done an invaluable disservice to us. He's doing damn because he is speaking on behalf, and I don't think I want to be very clear to black people who live in a city or live in cities. There are people who have never seen a black person. If they've seen him, it's been on TV, and all they know about black people is what they heard, and it's so the TV goes black people, it's that, and a third, they believe it, because they could go days, months, years without seeing a single black face in any reasonable way. So for Kanye West to be out there saying it, this is literally from God's mouth to their ears. Did he say in this shit that there's black people that believe in what's going on? Trump's not that bad. I told you Trump wasn't that bad. Kanye West is on board with it. The people who are not on board with it must just be bad eggs.
Right. And the other
and
thing
not good.
It's not good. I think that he's allowed the culture push things and be accepted. Because I don't know if you remember, when he first got with Kim Kardashian, he had already become a fashion darling, but they were ignoring actively Kim Kardashian because she is not someone that the fashion world embraces.
No.
So they embraced a Cardi B, but they were actively refusing to embrace Kim Kardashian. And he was coming to that Vogue gala, and he was saying he was the Met Gala. He wasn't going to come unless she came, and unless they got on the cover together. And he forced that, and by forcing that, that showed him a power that he had, and it empowered him to now keep pushing. He is like a modern day OJ to me, in that way, where he wants to try and transcend race. And I don't know what is going to be his issue, but it's a similar vibe, that idea that I'm going to be more than just black. I'm going to be Kanye. So when you look at the
quick backpedal on, let's say, him and OJ, so I don't think people really remember what OJ was prior to him murdering But he was somebody who was very outspoken about niggas need to stop. In essence, niggas need to stop complaining. Just work, do what you got to do. White people ain't gonna fuck with you. Just do what you got to do. And
right.
I'm OJ. I'm not black. I'm beyond that. And until he got in a jam, then he became the blackest man in all Blackhood. And we co-signed it to a certain degree, because I don't know if a lot of people remember when he got off. Niggas was super happy, not realizing we did not like OJ. Just we didn't like the racist system more.
Right.
But you're right. There's a lot of OJ in
yeah, there's a lot of OJ.
That.
And it, yeah, and it's just he wants, like, that Ralph Lauren thing, that whole it ain't Ralph though, that energy, that being pissed off because people didn't want to fund his idea for his homeless people clothes and all of that shit, like, and that cancer he threw, and the fact that Sway didn't fly his fucking head when he was screaming at him like that and didn't really,
that
like,
happened, fam. He yelled at another man to his face and said, you ain't got that, just screaming at that nigga like he was some dog in the street.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't understand how, I mean, kudos to Sway for, like, maintaining his professionalism, but he would have got fucked up after the mic was off. Like, what is your problem? But then he does this other pussy-ass shit where he flip-flops, apologizes, he'll fake cry, he'll manipulate, and people feel that. His tears do not fucking move me. I could give a fuck. Kanye West could sit on TV and cry for a fucking 10 hours, and I would turn the channel and try to figure out what was popping on This Is Us. I give a fuck. At this
he
point.
Was on. Well, remember when he had went up to TMZ? He was talking wild, reckless, and then Van was like, "No," like, and literally had to like school him. And then he was like, "Oh, I didn't know," and then was crying the next day, going like, "Oh, I fucked up, and I made all these things, and wasn't thinking, and I was wrong." And then a month or two later, he says, "This, what's that word? The 13th Amendment should get abolished."
Right,
right.
And
he's
but
also
what Kanye
very
West is
ignorant.
Doing, though. Kanye West is doing the thing. He's showing himself. I think that's what we have to realize, is that Kanye is showing who he always was, a person without a voice, much like how Whitney Houston just sang other people's songs. Kanye just rapped other people's words, and he really was given the title of musical genius when he wasn't, when he was undeserving. And so we have to acknowledge our own responsibility in making the monster that is Kanye West, because we gave him way more credit than he deserved because we fell in love with his potential. And it turns out,
I'm going to raise my hand and say I 100% was inputting in myself the idea that he was an empowered black man who
yes.
wasn't scared to speak up. I was Kanye West, like, no, he's just saying what he's thinking. And then it was like, no, you're fucking losing it. Because for a long time, I was like, no, you know what? This is what he thinks. Let him say what he thinks. It's good that he was raised to be able to open his mouth. And then it's like, no, you're opening your mouth and just saying whatever you feel at whatever moment. And it could be George Bush doesn't care about black people, to abolish the 13th Amendment, to, you know, I needed Don C to be around, and that's why my shit got fucked up. It's never his fault.
Right. And
no.
just for the record, Danny, I'm going to go with that. We give him so much space because his mother died, and we think that he acts bad and crazy and ill-behaved because his mother died. But I think that what I'm seeing here is that Donda West didn't do such a great job teaching her son how to be an accountable participant in society, and therefore his behavior is more a demonstration of the kind of mother that Donda was rather than her dying.
Yeah, because he's turned her death. Whoever she was as a person has been erased and has been completely consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, she's not a woman who lived or had any life. Because, like, for example, when you talk about someone else, I'm thinking of somebody like famous, when they have, like, they lose somebody. Like, for example, a lady from SNL, the light skinned one, Maya Rudolph.
Oh,
but she talks about
Minnie
her mom, Minnie Riperton. Don't know Minnie Riperton, but she speaks of Minnie Riperton. She speaks about it and like things that she was and things that she did. She's just not my dead mom. When you speak, this Donda literally is just his crutch. She's his bag.
Yep.
You know what she's like? You know when you're a little kid, and I think me and Chantel was talking about this in relation to something else, but there's a kid, always a little kid whose mom may have passed, may use it, you know, they weaponize it. They don't use it. Like, it's not like you feel bad, but it's like, I have a term called singing gospel at the Apollo, which is just a way, you know, when you watch Showtime at Apollo and they do gospel, you know you can't boo even if it's bad.
Right.
So it's like the little kid will say it. Yeah, you could use it too. No problem. It works for a lot of things, apparently. But when they use it in such a weaponized way, it's not like this person lived, had hopes, dreams, and aspirations. They're just your excuse why you were acting shitty. And because we are civilized people, we're not going to let get in your ass after you said some shit like that. You're going to be like, oh, okay, fair enough. But it's gross.
Right. You say, somebody makes a diss, they diss you, and you say, your mother, my mother's dead. And then now the whole conversation
is over. It shuts everything down.
All sad.
Over.
Yeah.
You're all sad. But then after a while, I think like I was telling you, you stop getting sad. You just stop talking, but then you start to resent the person because it's like, why do you keep bringing this person up? It's been, you know, I'm like, do you care? Are you just using it because you don't feel like dealing with what you have to deal with? Like, he's so bad, it makes me feel bad for Kim Kardashian, and I shouldn't. I should never feel bad for Kim
Kardashian.
Yeah, I
feel bad for her at this point, too. I'm embarrassed by her.
Oh, I don't. I don't.
I know you don't.
I never
feel bad
will.
So much as I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for her.
I'm nothing
and she's
for
literally
her.
Got fucked on camera.
Yeah, good for her. And this is what she wanted. She got it. I don't feel nothing for her. I hope that all the things and wish all the things that are bad that's going to come from being married to this maniac come upon her because she has asked for it. You know, don't start me
on
you,
that. Are you hitting it with the color purple?
Everything. I really do. Don't get me. That's a whole separate conversation.
Don't go
but
into
no,
this,
I don't feel bad
what,
for her.
This is an adjunct. This is an adjunct. What is your beef of? Because, I mean, obviously it's part of the whole conversation. What's your beef of?
What I think is that she is a demonstration of the worst kind of aspects of fame, culture, absence, vapid people, users of black women, users of black culture. She is a leech off of black culture who took things that would never be acceptable among black women, and use it to capitalize and get rich. There's nothing special about her. There's nothing great about her. But she was able to utilize things that black women have always had and use it to make herself rich and then be the victim every time somebody brings up the fact that she got fucked on camera and that's how she became famous. So I give a fuck about Kim Kardashian. Never did. Her whole family could go to hell in a handbasket together because I feel like they are, in fact, the worst of everything. I don't care that she got a hold of Kanye West. He wasn't shit to get. I just think that she is this demonstration and a visual representation. And also, I must say that the one time I ever caught that damn show, she's an evil, wicked bitch to her sisters. And she called the other one the ugly one and told her she was jealous of her because she was ugly and fat. She said that to her sister because her sister woke her up. She's a horrible bitch.
They're just collectively not cool with Khloé. Like, they're collectively not cool,
that's
and it's never brought up.
But that's not the point. She's a mean bitch, and I don't like that, and I think that what we have to stop doing is idolizing wicked, mean bitches and let real bitches back on the menu. I'm sick of this.
No, that's never going to happen. But I feel you, but that's never going to happen. And, I mean, that's slightly, and if we get back in, but that's never going to happen because wicked mean bitches are the ones who are going to always aspire. Dudes are going to always want to try to break them, turn them into
nice
quality chicks. Yeah, they feel like it's a challenge, and they always take the challenge. Like if someone just shows up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a really good insight, Danny. That's a good insight.
Yeah, people like a challenge, and that's a challenge. And also, once they cool, they're like, if you're so mean, I'm going to get you to fucking let me. That's why I'd be talking about somebody. I'm not going to say the name. But to somebody we know, to like somebody we know, and the more the other person like riffs at them, it seems to activate that person more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. But no, Kanye gave her the cosign, and I feel like on a level it sucks. And I want to do the show about this is that I feel like we don't talk about the music anymore because I think after watch for me, I'll give my two cents into the music side of it. I feel like after 88 and Heartbreak, it's been all that not downhill, but it's just been a big a miasma of fucking shit. Like Yeezus,
I'll give you an
like
exception.
Pablo.
Malik made a good point. The compilation album, Cruel Summer, that shit was good. The whole thing was good. With Clint.
But that's because he's a leech and he sucks the life out of
Clint,
other people.
Mercy, he rode that 2 Chainz wave. He jumped off the what is his name?
Little Wayne.
T-Pain wave. No, he jumped off the T-Pain wave, let Jay-Z diss T-Pain. T-Pain's fucking career basically went
T-Pain
to
really,
shit.
Honestly, didn't deserve what they did to him. because
right.
I feel
and
like
and then he jumped
he
on the 2 Chainz wave.
Fine.
Remember, he rode that 2 Chainz wave that summer. That at that point where he kind of grabbed 2 Chainz and brought him into the fold, he rode that 2 Chainz wave. And also after hearing, and you know I'm no Drake fan, and you know how I feel about Drake. Listening
yeah.
to Drake on that episode of The Shop with LeBron James break down that foul shit Kanye West did to him, the fact that he did not fuck Kanye West up yet tells me that he's Canadian for sure. Because
so
what
give
he
a quick rundown.
See,
what did
okay.
Kanye West
so
do to Drake?
The way, according to Drake, the way he explained it was that Kanye West invited him to his studio to talk, to catch up, to talk about music, to get a little help on some music. He played some beats for Drake, gave Drake the beat, was talking about, oh, what's going on with your life, what's up with you. Drake's telling him, oh, I had a baby, I'm having beef with my baby mother, or whatever, what have
oh,
you.
Okay.
And he's saying to Drake, like, well, when is your album coming out? Because I just want to know, kind of like, oh, so Drake's like, yeah, June 14th, whatever, what have you. He never tells Drake, I'm working on six, you know, four or five projects for my people. He doesn't say nothing. Then when the guy with the sick one, 40, when he went to Wisconsin, he got there before Drake. 40 was
Wyoming.
Like, I think he's making, yeah, Wyoming. He's like, I think he's making an album. And Drake's like, no, he told me his album's coming out in October. They get there, and Drake helps him, like, does some writing for him, dips off, and then he doesn't talk to Kanye no more. He gets a text message the morning that the music comes out talking about, I love you, you know, like, basically, like, apologizing, but not apologizing, and Drake doesn't know what's going on. And then he wakes up and listens to Kanye's album where they're getting at him, and then pushes shit where they're getting at him. And he's like, what the fuck just happened? And he was 60% finished with the album. So the last 40% of the album was done after everything occurred. And what he was saying is that it drove him and it motivated him, but it was fucked up what happened, and that he did respond. He was saying that he responded in such an ugly way that he felt like he didn't want to be the person to be the person to make that, to put that song out, because that wasn't who he was trying to be. He said he knows that rap purists don't want to hear that shit. Rap purists want to hear the fucked up bars. They don't care about, like, none of that other shit. And
yeah.
he said, but for him, for himself as a person, he didn't feel comfortable doing it, and that's why it was not done. But basically,
so
he had
a comeback ready to go.
But
he
it was really close, because he was really, his problem, he said his problem is with Kanye. Like, his problem is not really with Pusha, it's with Kanye. Because Pusha knows what he knows because someone else told him.
Oh, okay. So this is like some real chick shit, pretty much.
So, because what he did was very shicey. I've had you come to my house, tell me all your business, and then I tell someone your business and throw the battery in their back, and we diss him, and then I send him a text from I love you, or whatever.
So, in essence, just to break it down, niggas brought him over there to spill to chop it up and drink rosé
mm-hmm.
and spill some tea. He got all the tea, put it into a
thermos. And a song written.
Yep. Niggas got the tea, put in terms, did some work, didn't tell him the meaning, just to hang out, chop it up. Now, like, he had a fucking thing. They took that tea, poured it all out the fucking Pusha T, and then niggas clowned him the whole night, recorded it, and put the shit out. And nigga
mm-hmm.
hit him with a text the day it came out going, yeah, my bad on that. Not even
right.
my bad. Like,
I
fucked
you.
With you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Because, I mean, Malik, what's your opinion on Drake?
Well, I think that Drake, I'm not a fan of Drake. I've never been a fan of Drake. But I do think the way Drake got did was, you know, done in this instance was dirty. But I also think that it's a demonstration of what Kanye always did. He's a leech. He takes from people. And that's why, like, when they call him a musical genius, you know that that's not what he is. I think that Drake's approach to it is one of those unsteady approaches of a person who's also not authentic. So he is very similar to Kanye West. He is kind of tiptoeing around.
A leech?
No, not as much in a leech, because I think that Drake is, I don't think he's trying to take from anyone else.
I think Drake's a worker.
He's a worker bee, but I also think when I say persona-wise, Drake is a corny nigga from Canada, okay?
Yeah.
He's not anything else. So a lot of the the ways in which he's an actor, and I think he acts. I think he gets around people. Remember, he was all with Lil Wayne and them, and then that kind of mm-hmm. like, and when he's with Nicki, and then when he's with the younger boys, and with, like
and he said he's a road man sometimes from England.
Yeah,
he has his road
that's
man like, energy.
Yeah,
now he's weird.
Now he's a reggaeton guy.
Ego. Like he can be anything, and that's what I'm saying. Those type of people are not people who you can trust for any type of authenticity, and he's just not. And so I've never liked Drake for that. And any man who sings and raps, I get question marks because I don't really. I think you got to pick a side, and so I don't.
Sure.
I don't want it.
Because very rarely does someone have that. If they do have that ability, chances. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think anyone's rapped and sang, with the exception of him. I mean, does anybody who's rapped and sang that's been like solid? But usually they're you know, they're good at one, they're good at both, but not great at either.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why
I don't think
I wish Drake would stop singing, to be quite honest with you. You know, is Carl Thomas busy? You know, like if we could stop that. Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, because
that's the person. Lauryn Hill sings and raps very well.
That's a whole fucking
conversation. That one time 20 years ago, that bitch sang down and rapped down that you can't even argue. She is one.
Because she had serious fucking bars, did nothing with them. You know, she was really, should have stuck to rapping, in my opinion. I think she was a better rapper than a singer, but maybe that's a hot take. I don't think so. I think she just was, when she rapped, there was no doubt in my mind she was the best female rapper at the time. There was nobody better than her at the time. And I think
but
she
I guess,
kept up with it.
Yeah.
Would you put it
one of the things that I think we keep touching on, I think is important to this whole entire conversation, is what does it matter about these rappers, about them being authentic, about who, or is it more important who we believe them to be? I was a Kanye West fan from college dropout to graduation with a few honorable mentions because of who I thought Kanye was. But I wasn't really paying attention. I wasn't really paying attention to who he was. I was just letting him tell me, and I was, you know, and I wasn't making him back it up. He didn't, you know, he didn't have to do anything to prove he was this person. He just,
but that was
he said it, and
day,
I believed
though.
It.
We're not gonna blame anyone. I mean, you can't really nail you because back in the day, if someone said they were a thing, he was like, fair enough. I'll believe you until I have a reason not to believe. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Big Daddy Kane was no longer in the paint because he said he was all these things, and then got robbed, and then we realized he wasn't, and then he was gone, and that was just
right.
how it worked. The streets had figured out soon enough if you was about what you said you were about.
I think
that was how it
changed
worked for me.
When Rick Ross was exposed and nothing happened.
Fuck, you know that was. You know where I was going with it. Good, good on you. You know my syntax. That blows my fucking mind to this day.
It blows mine
too. He still gets to cook, and he's talking about all this murder shit. And this nigga was a good nigga. Had a job doing the opposite.
But he wasn't. He didn't just have a job. Let's clarify. He was a correction officer.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
More ironic.
But not just a correction officer, a good corrections officer. Somebody
yeah.
who did a wonderful job. Somebody that they said, we love the dude around here. He did a good job keeping these niggas in check. And then literally showed up the next day talking about, I'm flipping packs. I'm doing all this other stuff. And no
Big
one meets him and got him out the paint.
Well, the one
how
thing
did
that is
work?
That he, because I think his relationship with Trick Daddy and Trina and the ghostwriting all in Miami was what he was doing on the side. So that he was
right.
always a good dude to them. And then the persona, I guess, was that, you know, remember CB4? Like how you had
yes.
to have, like, you had
yeah.
to have either I was a gangster from L.A. or I'm a super Muslim or I'm a, you know, I'm
but
a
that's
pimp.
What the movie
like,
was
those,
about, was that
yeah.
Any what's his name?
Chris Rock.
Was it?
Chris Rock.
Yeah. No, it was Chris Rock, but no, the guy. Because remember, they were like some nerd. They were just some nerd niggas that liked hip hop. And
yeah.
then why am I shifting Eddie Murphy's brother's name? Charlie Murphy. Yeah, Charlie Murphy was the guy. He was like the neighborhood drug dealer, and then he got
right.
locked up. He said, "Let's just rap and act like him." So he more or less was doing that guy impression, and then they hit it big. And when that guy got out of jail, that was like the pressure of it because he got out of jail and said, "I want my money." You just
yeah.
literally stole my fucking thing.
My
and
whole
the guy
life.
Did the whole
right.
Yeah, he took my life. But back in the day, that used to be gross. Now you can get away with it. I think Drake got popular because, I mean, he is what they're saying he is, no doubt. But at no point is he saying I'm a gangster or a killer. He's doing affectations, personality affectations.
Well, at the most, Drake will tell you that he knows killers. And that's true. That's fair.
He probably does. Yeah. Anybody with any kind of money knows killers. That's true. That's true statement.
Anybody with no money knows killers.
Sure.
But I think, too, I mean, you end up with – I think if you really want to get down to a lot of this, it's Jay-Z's fault. Because in the middle of all of this acting persona shifting, no matter who, you had Jay Z who did very similar things, right? Jay Z would he would rock with the South, and he would do it. He would grab these people from here. He would make shit that was he thought was hot really be hot. You know, you'd be like, oh, my God, that shit is the new shit now. He would do that. Still, there was still something firm about who he was. He was able to dip in his feet in people's pools, make it hot, and keep it moving. He didn't lose himself. And I think that's the thing where it's like when you are a chameleon or you don't actually have a persona, and that's why you're Kanye West or you're Drake and you're kind of just floating versus Kanye West versus Jay-Z, who kind of comes around and adapts and moves along with the flow, but can still be 50-something years old, damn near, and make an album that's authentic to his life right now. So I think this is all his fault.
Because, I mean, Jay-Z can do it. He was very good at it. We've had this discussion before in terms of Jay-Z was good at – because in the beginning he was number two to Biggie or three to Big L, depending on who you ask, and then he kind of lingered around. Depending who you ask, when you ask. I love – again, you know, there's a perfect example of authenticity, right? I love Big L. When I first met you, I was like, Big L was like my number one guy. And then it started coming out about what type of dirtbag this nigga was, and that kind of fucked it all up. Because it's like you really can't – it's not authentic to be you big man. You knock a nigga out between your baby mother or whatever. Then you find out this nigga had niggas set up to get robbed. No,
yeah.
You was a
waste. And that's for you, it's
got to
be hard because you, especially as someone who had like aspirations at a certain point, Big L is Bible. You know what I mean? Like, to certain people from a certain age group, that's Bible. Like, that rapper, that vibe, that energy is Bible. And then to find out you thought it was a tragic loss of life, and it was, you know, I don't want to say too
deserved.
Much, but it was what it
no,
was.
No, that nigga had it coming. There's very instances where niggas had it coming. You having niggas fucking robbed and then
I'll
telling niggas,
that.
Oh, I don't know, this, and say whatever. No, I'm saying you don't think that nigga had it coming? You, the queen of violence, don't think he had it coming for that shit?
I understand what happened.
I think you want to put a nigga in the ground for bumping into you. Get out of here, you.
But
I get
look
it.
At,
I get
what
it.
That looks like, though, right? Look at what that looks like and look at what the extreme that we're asking for from the culture, right? Because if you look at it from a flip side, you're saying this is supposed to be entertainment. These people are supposed to be here to entertain you, but yet we want you to really be flipping them pies. We really want you to be a big meat. We really want you to be the killer. I'm not a killer, but don't push me. Like, we really want that. And since I brought that line up, I think he was the biggest proponent of that. Tupac was the biggest demonstration of a person who could pretend to be one person and even
and be somebody
death,
completely different.
And be somebody totally different. And again, I don't mean to bring
Drake
up the thing you don't
just
believe in, but he too is a Gemini. And I don't want to bring it up this that
no,
whole
that's okay.
time
I'll
of year.
Fine.
When they
I think Drake
that whole Drake is a Scorpio, but that's different.
Drake I know I think Drake and Tupac are the same dude. I feel like Pac and Drake I think if Tupac came out now is the same
Drake
identity.
Does it better. Drake does it better.
Yeah, much.
Drake is
Tupac
not drinking the Kool-Aid and being stupid. Like, Drake's not going to get himself shot behind this Kanye West shit.
Yeah,
well, that's
what
he said. He wasn't
going
to release
40.
It. Tupac released a song and said, you claim to be a player, but I fucked your wife. We don't even know if that's true, but I think we kind of believe it because he said it.
Yeah, and well, then right. She started fucking with Stevie J, so I'm pretty confident she's a nigga that fucks the poop, so.
I was thinking that, but I didn't want to besmirch her name because she's an older
I'm
lady.
I'm say that all
who's
I
been
know
through a lot.
Is if I drop dead and I drop dead and you, no matter how long, need to start fucking. It's not like a good nigga. It's not like Seed or somebody that we know thought he was a good nigga. This nigga that she's fucking is dirt. Like, we know photographically that Steve J is dirt. He's a coke sniffing dirtbag. She's with this nigga. She fucked the crew. She fucked the nigga Pop. Get out of here. Boo.
But see, that's the difference between Tupac and Drake, right? Again, Tupac was faking so bad that he was willing to die behind this shit. And Drake was like, yeah, I'm not willing to die behind this, so I'm going to just keep my little comment to myself, and if y'all call me a punk, I'm okay with that because I'm still selling millions of records and the white kids love me. They're doing the fucking Kiki challenge and it's all good. So
you know how you always talk about you talk about manhood in the black community, Danny, a lot. This is a moment where being raised by who he was raised by, he doesn't have the need to prove his manhood so much that he's going to jump out the window and mess up everything he's gotten set up until now.
Because it would have done him a no good deed.
But even LeBron James was looking ahead and told him, selfishly, I wanted you to release it because I like, basically, I'm with the shit. Like, I like the back and forth. But as your friend, I understand why you made the decision. Because I didn't know Drake and LeBron James were like friends. Like, they're friends.
Yeah, I think LeBron. If I had to meet LeBron, I personally would like to meet LeBron because I think he's probably a down to earth dude because he keeps his circle pretty tight. But
you know why he's down to earth, Danny? Because he and I have the same birthday.
Oh, that's it? That's how it works?
You have the same birthday as Tiger Woods, too. How about that?
But Tiger Woods is full black, though. I'll co-sign someone with Malik said, and he ain't full black. So that Asian shit, that's got some of that wonton for the sauce to fuck it all up. They got some soy sauce in there, changed the equation up.
His mother's Vietnamese. I don't even know what sauce they use.
They use fish sauce. It's like fish in a jar and let it sit overnight. God bless. Shout out to the Vietnamese. Anywho, I think Drake would have came out with that. It wouldn't have been good to see. Because I heard someone talk about it today, and they referred to Pusha T as the other guy. So I'm like, they would have done nothing for Drake's career to keep that going. Now, final question. What did you guys think?
It did what it did for Pusha T's career. We can't deny that.
Yeah, because nobody was, I mean, as much as it pains me to say this, but no one really will push his teeth. And you know that's the case. I mean, people like him. The people like him. But, like, he wasn't any new fans. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's not getting any new fans. It's not going to be the reemergence of Boom Bap, Pusha T niggas. No, it's going to be the same niggas and fucking Tim's and Durags. That was
it's
going
to be the same
Monday.
Crowd of SOBs rocking out to what happened to them boys, and it's fine.
Yep, 25% of that and 75% European dudes. Because Europeans, all the rappers we don't use anymore, the Europeans take.
And
they
love
them.
I love
they
need to make a check.
Yeah, I have no problem with it, because if it wasn't for them, they'd fucking go broke and die. So God bless the Germans that like boom bap rap for some fucking reason, keeping fucking hip-hop alive.
They mad late, but it's okay.
Were they into sauce back then? I don't think they were. I knew the Asians were always about it.
Oh, the Germans were too. The Germans were too. Because remember that army influence, that black army dude, people influence, I think, always permeated culture once they dealt with their unfortunate incident.
Yeah, the unfortunate incident? Like I said earlier today, that's on the same level as Catwoman the movie. The unfortunate isn't there. Fucking terrible all the way around. Just a loss of human life.
I will say this though to you, Danny. I have not been back to Kanye West since 2010 as an artist. Because
that's the final question we're going to close out. What did you guys think of this summer? Not just his music, but what he produced. The good music summer. What did you think of?
Oh, bad.
Yeah, so what did you think of all of
them?
Terrible.
Can I just tell you a truth? I listen to Pusha's shit because I like Pusha. Teyana Taylor as a character, I love. That album was horrific to me. It just wasn't for me. And,
yeah, sorry about that. Hold on. It's too early, fam.
I'm like, okay.
Because we started a little bit early, so that's fine. Don't worry about it. Go ahead.
So what I was saying is that I didn't listen to Kanye West thing because I was like, I'm not even giving you a download, a stream. Pusha's shit was okay. Nas's, like, I feel like Nas died a little bit. Like, that was terrible. That was not good.
One, I couldn't get through it. I got through, like, maybe three songs, and I had to shut it off. But, again, I'm not a Nas fan anymore. I lost Nas after Illmatic. No, after Illmatic, and then The Message, and I wasn't a fan. What about you, Malik? Did you listen to any of them?
I listened to Teyana Taylor because I like that's the only one I was willing to. No, I listened to Pusha T first one time, never went back. I listened to Teyana's album twice, and then never went back because Teyana's album was just terribly put together. Pusha's album was good, but I don't need it. My Name is the same album, so I could just go back to that.
But with
Teyana, I was hopeful for her because she is talented, and so I wanted to hear something that was good, but I didn't. And I would never listen to a Kanye West album. You couldn't pay me to listen to anything that stupid motherfucker says.
I listened to Life of Pablo. I listened to Life of Pablo, and there's three songs on the Life of Pablo. Well, that's not true. There's really one song on the Life of Pablo that I fuck with, and that's because Chance the Rapper fucking bodied that shit. So.
All right, thank you guys. We're going to be closing out.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. When we talk about, we're going to have a conversation about interracial dating in about a week or two. I want you on that one, too.
Oh. You're trying to give me real talking on here, huh?
Yeah. It's going to be about interracial dating. It's not going to be any news that week. It's going to be a full hour and a half about interracial dating. Why not? All those things.
Okay. I look forward to it.
Okay. All right. I love you guys. Talk to you later.
Love you. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye. We're done for the week. It's been a wonderful show. You can listen to us at, pregameradio.net. Obviously, you found this particular fucker show. Jesus Christ. I don't got a lot of time because the songs, we're about to wrap up, but I love Nas. Like, any motherfucking straight nigga could love a fucking rapper, and he fucking threw it all the fuck away. And the fact that nobody wants to co-sign the fact that he's fucking trash now. He's just a nigga that old bitches love. All right, let's have another conversation about that. But it's been a pleasure to talk to you guys. Again, it's the Black NPR Pod, Black NPR Pod at Twitter.com, the Black NPR at Outlook.com. If you want to see Danny Crude up on Facebook, again, pregameradio.net. Listen to all our shows. Love, Peace, and Slander. Tax Time with Tezra. Blah, 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 blah. I'm missing them. The Gold Aid are all there. It's been a pleasure. Thanks to my producer, Brooklyn Black. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
We are Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.